Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Wednesday, January 13th. And John, what sport did we watch on Monday night? Was that college football? I honestly had a hard time telling.
That was actually the XFL came back.
Oh, good. Because that to me looked like two, at least one and a half teams that were playing a different sport than I watched Michigan State play this fall.
Yeah, it was a bit more exciting.
just a little.
The offense had a bit more pop, as you can say, on both sides of the ball, specifically on Alabama's side. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I truly admit that every play, watching it go for yards, was exciting. And it's not something I want to do all the time. I like to stay in my little cocoon in the Big Ten and, you know, get some good punts. But I don't think I don't think Alabama's punters saw the field. And is that the best job in college football?
I think it has to be. I think the best job in college football is Alabama's punter, and the worst job is Alabama's kicker. Because if Alabama's kicker ever is in a situation where he is needed, can you imagine the pressure? No. Yeah. So I think that special teams room has quite the diversion from one end to the other. But I mean, it was just crazy. So in case you're living under a rock, Alabama beat Ohio State for the national championship. Nick Saban 7th. Final score is 52-24. It was just crazy. I mean, we watched Ohio State all year, especially against, you know, firsthand against Michigan State, and that team was really good. Clearly the class of the conference. They went out and they put a pretty good beatdown on what everybody assumed was the second best team in the country in Clemson, the presumptive number one overall pick, Trevor Lawrence. They made him look a little silly. And then they go out and they get more than doubled up by Alabama. And not only that, but they just looked so – after the first, call it quarter plus, quarter and a half, where Ohio State kind of kept punching back. I think they were tied at like 14-14 or something like that. After that, it just all fell apart. Alabama went into, you know, hyperdrive, Adam Gase hyperdrive, and just never looked back. And it just looked so easy. And that was the part that really blew my mind more than anything else.
It was upsetting to see how
uncomfortable,
comfortable and easy it was. You know, and I know Najee Harris had a really nice quote where he was saying after the game, he's like, that wasn't easy, you know, credit Ohio State. I was getting beat up. And it's like, buddy, I know you're saying all the right things right now, but you have to understand that what we just saw, you don't score 52 points in a national championship game. It's not a thing. You weren't playing, you know, it looked like they were out there, you know, playing a Sun Belt team. And it was Ohio State for the national championship, an undefeated Ohio State team who is going to put a handful of first rounders out. Like, I don't know. It begs the question, Austin, how far away is Ohio State from Alabama? You know, if we like to think Ohio State is the barometer in the Big Ten, they are for all intents and purposes. They are the best by far year over year. And all the way back to past 25 years, they are easily the best overall record. And yet, they're seemingly, as a program, far behind Alabama, as was showcased in that game. And it didn't look like a fluke. Like, 10 out of 10 times, that result probably happens. A beatdown. So how far away is Ohio State from Alabama? And then my next question is, well, how far away is Michigan State? So what do you think?
So if we answer that question, you think of it of like, to stay topical, the length of a football field. So 100 yards, Alabama's, you know, one of the end zones, and everybody else is some distance from that end zone. I think Ohio State and Clemson are probably the only two programs that you could consider are even in the red zone. And Ohio State is like on the 19. And Clemson is on, like, I'll give Clemson the 10. You know, those are the two teams that every year consistently are recruiting with Bama in the rankings, and they're, you know, supposedly right up there. But something's just different in the water down in Bama. And I think maybe, I think the main thing is that, yes, those rankings are, you know, as a whole, so you're considering the whole class. I think the biggest difference is that the best linemen on both sides of the ball are the ones that go to Bama. I think that's the biggest difference, is that those are the battles that they win in recruiting more often than not. I mean, you go back and look at that 2017 class graphic that was making the rounds on Monday night of all these insane players that went to Alabama in that class, which included Tua and Mac Jones, you know, Jerry Jeudy, Najee Harris, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith, like this crazy list of characters. In there is also Alex Leatherwood and Jedrick Wills, two tackles that both played on these in these last 2 years. And like, that's the type of guy that Alabama's getting. And they're just they're so much bigger in the trenches that it's kind of wild. So I would say that that's probably what separates them more than anything else. I mean, skill position, obviously they've got elite players, but I mean, Ohio State's they're no chumps when it comes to skill position guys. I mean, Olave, Garrett Wilson was making some nice plays last night. Their tight ends made a few plays. Justin Fields obviously is very talented, but and it's just a little different over at Alabama. So I'd say Ohio State's probably the only other team within the remote red zone. Behind them, you've got, you know, I think like the Oklahoma, Notre Dame caliber,
Georgia.
Yeah, they're kind of the ones next. But when it comes back to Michigan State, I mean, I think MSU just took a touchback. So they might be like on their own 20. Maybe the ball went out of bounds and we're, you know, somewhere near midfield, or maybe they're not that actually, that's too close. Maybe there was a holding penalty on the, or maybe the gunner on the other team ran out of bounds or something, and MSU got a 10-15 yard penalty and they're somewhere near their own 30. But I mean, at this point in time, like I said, it almost looks like they're playing a different sport. And let me make it perfectly clear. Most teams in America are like that when it's compared to Alabama. The other side of the 50 is packed full of teams when it comes to comparing them to the Crimson Tide. But MSU, I think, you know, a year ago, if we're talking about last offseason, they're pinned against their own end zone, in my opinion. There's just a Bama's punter made one of his only punts of the year, and he really pinned him back, coffin corner. But now, you know, they've got a little breathing room. I think, you know, as we'll talk about with the roster in the offseason, like, the roster's trending the right way. I think Mel Tucker is a type of guy who's going to – he's already proven, I think, in this transfer window more than anything else, that he has appeal to some really top-level guys. Maybe not all the guys that you're seeing in that Bama locker room, but some of the skill position guys. I mean, he's obviously got some level of attraction to them, and we'll see what else – you know, how else he rounds out this roster. So I think MSU is still pretty far behind. I don't think that's a bold take. But what about you?
I think it sounds bad, but I think it's important. There's always perspective. And, you know, MSU just got off an awesome run with a fun ride with Mark D'Antonio. The highs were high, the lows were low. But we saw how high the high could be, and they played Bama, and it wasn't particularly close. And, you know, you can feed 3-star kids as much disrespect and hate as you want, but there's a ceiling on that. And I think we've turned a chapter to a guy who has been a part of some of those programs you mentioned that are in the same hemisphere and on the right side of the 50 with Bama. And he understands that you can scheme all you want. It's about personnel. And that's the next step, you know, as Michigan State has to enter itself into the conversation of guys that can get off the bus with Alabama. I think a great litmus test is, how many guys on Michigan State's team could play at Bama? Start.
From last year, I'd be hard pressed to find.
And it doesn't. And Matt Coughlin doesn't count.
No, legitimately, and I again don't think this is hyperbole, I would be very hard pressed to find one. I really would. I mean, they're that talented.
Shaq Brown, Naquan Jones, and Antoine Simmons could see the field. That's where
Xavier Henderson might see the field.
They can see the field. So I think that's the litmus test, right? So, and we, as we've talked about in this pod for a while, Mel is creating or trying to create a roster that is completely different size-wise, talent-wise than what we're accustomed to. And so that means that the ceiling is actually higher. And that's good. Does it mean we'll ever get there? Who knows? Ideally, we are. But that said, I don't want to throw away what D'Antonio did because for what it's worth, he did something. You mentioned the handful of teams that are in the same, you know, world as Bama. Every other team that you didn't mention would have killed for the run that D'Antonio brought Michigan State. But we've turned the corner, and now Mel Tucker, as we mentioned, has added a few kids and got one recently that makes Michigan State's running backs room one of the most competitive, not just in the Big Ten, but an eye-opening room in any outside of maybe Bama in the country. Adding Kenneth Walker, stud running back transfer from Wake Forest.
Yeah, I mean, Kenneth Walker is a really exciting addition to this team. I mean, he comes in with 3 years of eligibility left, so it's not just the short-term grad transfer type guy. He comes in and probably will keep that extra year of eligibility that everyone's getting. Checks in at 5'10", 206 pounds, really compact runner. But this kid is a pure running back. I mean, you watch him run and you almost don't – you're like, oh my God, is that a real running back? It's almost something that MSU hasn't seen in a handful of years since the LJ Scott era, probably. You know, not only is he have a lot of eligibility, which is exciting. He's been productive. I mean, in 2020, an abbreviated season for Wake Forest, I believe he only played in five games. He had 579 yards and 13 touchdowns. And not against a bunch of scrubs either. I mean, he did all his damage really against all Power Five teams. Actually, he only, if I'm reading this right, he only played in four games this season. I don't know if that's correct. Right. I might just, yeah. But No. I'm seeing this. I was reading that wrong. He played in a lot more games than that this season. He played in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. But still, he scored multiple touchdowns against North Carolina, Syracuse, Virginia, NC State. Had over 100 yards in three games. You know, not anything to scoff at from a production standpoint. And, you know, now when you take a step back and look at the running back room between Kenneth Walker, Harold Joyner, the transfer from Auburn, and Jordan Simmons, when you think about the depth and the Jimmys and Joes versus X's and O's concept that you were just walking through, that's the type of room that you want to see, ideally at every position, where you've got, okay, plan A is not working. We also got plan B. God forbid we got to go to plan C. We feel okay about that too. You know, that's the dream for every single position across the board. And it is cool to see it kind of start to come together for Michigan State, especially at a skill position where, honestly, the depth hasn't been there in quite some time.
Well, and Austin, the cool thing about these three running backs, they're all different. You know, they all bring something very different to the table, which I think is so helpful when you're trying. There's carries to be had for all three because they're different types of runners. And I think that's a great thing. Doesn't mean, and for what it's worth, there are a couple kids on the roster. I think we'll see a bit more turnover because of this addition from to the running backs room, probably from the running backs room, because it's pretty crowded right now. But you got to feel good. You got to feel good about what Mel Tucker has done at the most important position, quarterback. The wide receivers are still thin, but you know.
I think one exciting underrated part of this Kenneth Walker thing is that, you know, Harold Joyner was obviously brought in to play in the backfield, but really Harold Joyner at his the most effective role for him to play, which he somewhat played at Auburn, is yes, to get carries. He's obviously going to be a guy that gets a good amount of carries, but it's really to more play that Connor Hayward type of like H-back-ish role mm-hmm. where you're catching a lot of passes out of the backfield. And listen, I love Connor, but Harold Joyner is that's another level of guy. It's just a whole different level of athlete that you've now got playing and a lot more horsepower from that position. And it puts Connor into a position where, yeah, he's playing a handful of snaps a game, which is probably the role he should have been playing this entire time. Mm-hmm. But what Kenneth Walker brings is a pure running back. And now you've got, I will not be surprised at all if you see a lot of two running back sets with both of them back there. Harold Joyner probably receiving more out of the backfield, but listen, that's the type of stockpile of weapons that good teams need to have. Now, again, you've got in the backfield now the Jimmys and the Joes. We need to see what exists in Anthony Russo before anybody gets terribly carried away, or maybe Peyton Thorne steps up and wins the job. That quarterback play will obviously be huge, but the ability to have multiple running backs as well as an offensive line that should take a step forward with the addition of Jared Horst from Arkansas State. It's starting to look, I'll put it this way. I think the offense pretty clearly bottomed out last year. I don't see MSU's offense going back down to that level of play mm-hmm. for hopefully ever, but the mm-hmm. foreseeable future, certainly.
So long way to go. Catch your breath. The college football season has come to an end. We're probably going to see a pause on incoming transfers for the time being, as there are only limited spots and there's going to be a more transition and turnover that needs to happen before new folks can come in. Also keep an eye on the commits who have yet to sign. There's a second signing day coming, and you'd like to see a few names that Michigan State has had hard commits from or are still chasing. Bolster that recruiting class that we talked about on last pod. Still a lot of work to do, but I think the feeling is positive. There's a direction. Mel Tucker has a vision. People can start to feel good about what he's trying to do. With that, there's a school down the road that Michigan State plays yearly for the Paul Bunyan Trophy, who is committed to going in the other direction. And we applaud that. We applaud that. We thank them for it. And Michigan we just thought it was, it's national news, signed an extension for Jim Harbaugh and asked him to take a 50% pay cut, not pandemic related, to coach at his alma mater, which is one of the most embarrassing things I think could happen to somebody. I mean, truly, and that's not just trolling. Like that is an embarrassing thing. I would like you at home to think about if your organization came to you and said, you can keep your job for half the pay. Do you want it? And the problem with Jim Harbaugh's situation was most people would say, screw off. I'm going to find somewhere that appreciates me. No one will appreciate Jim Harbaugh because he is bad at his job as of late, and nobody wants to take the risk to hire him. And I will say this. I applaud Michigan for the self-awareness. I do believe that Jim Harbaugh is probably the best option available this year. Doesn't mean mm-hmm. that's the same next year. But they're stuck. They are in purgatory. They have married their nuclear option, and until death do they part, they are together. And Mel Tucker doesn't seem to have a problem with it, so let's keep it going, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a complex situation. I mean, I saw somebody tweet, I think you might have sent it to me, John, something that it might have been a Michigan's fan that said, if you told me back in 17 that Najee Harris didn't sign with Ohio or Michigan didn't lose to Ohio State, Najee Harris had broke a bunch of records and Jim Harbaugh was negotiating a new contract, I would have been over the moon. And unfortunately, all those things are true, but it means just about nothing positive for the University of Michigan. I mean, it's almost a situation where you wonder if Ward Manuel, the AD at Michigan, offered Harbaugh a contract and just simply didn't think he was going to take it.
I mean,
he's still, yeah. And you, to give you credit, you posited that to me before we started recording. So I'm just stealing your thunder a bit, but I think there's some, there might be some credibility to that just because like you said, I can't imagine being offered, hey, you can keep your job, but here's a half as much money. What do you think? And saying like, you know, you've got him so backed up that either he's going to say no and leave, which is ultimately probably what most people want to happen, or he's going to say yes, and you now save $4 million a year and there's no buyout in the contract. Like, it's an incredible business move from Ward Manuel. You got to give him credit where credit is due. I mean, that is remarkable what he was able to get him to agree to, but it just shows you that at this point in time, there really are no suitors for Jim Harbaugh. Now, I don't actually believe that wholeheartedly. I think it takes one stupid owner, John Gruden and Mike Mayock getting hired in Vegas completely blew my, like, hey, maybe these guys know what they're doing. Like, reliance just out of the water. Like, I don't think anybody knows what they're doing. I think it's going to take one owner to be like, all right, let's go get Jim Harbaugh. There's no buyout. We'll pay him the same thing he's getting paid at Michigan. And now that price isn't prohibitive. So I still think this marriage might not last a whole lot longer. But if you're Harbaugh, like, what your choices are, either you just like either you win enough that somebody's going to come calling. OK, like an NFL team will actually come calling, or you keep losing and then no one comes calling and thus you don't leave Ann Arbor. So like the fans, it's almost like the end game here is, it's like, you know, the marriage is going bad, but you're like, let's just go to one last therapy session and see if we can have a breakthrough. And it's like, you know what? And we might as well just call it a day, but no one's got anywhere to go. Like, I don't think anyone's going to hire Jim Harbaugh to be a coordinator because he's not even calling plays for his own offense and hasn't since they hired Josh Gattis. And he's an asshole. Nobody wants to work with him. I don't even think his brother would want to hire him. So I just don't know where he goes.
He doesn't. Because I know you say it takes one dumb owner, but even the most insane owner, you hire someone based on their stability or creativity in the NFL. He brings neither to the table. The problem at Michigan is, to your point earlier, is he's going to win enough that they can't fire him, right, but not enough that anyone will want to take him seriously. He's going to – they're Iowa East. And frankly, that's okay. People should strive for that.
So here's a question. I know it's about to be Bill O'Brien, but as soon as Bill O'Brien graduates from the Saban School of Rehabilitation after his stint as offensive coordinator next year, do we get a Jim Harbaugh in Tuscaloosa offensive coordinator apprenticeship?
He'd never take
a shot. Can I pray just to watch Jim Harbaugh be the one that burns down the Alabama empire, because that would make me so happy.
It's an amazing fantasy, but it involves one of the most stubborn, arrogant people to take a step down. And while he did take the pay cut, I'm not sure you could take the title demotion as well, regardless of if it's at Alabama.
No, so, there's no chance.
So I think, you know, we don't have to spend all day on it, but it's just when we could, because it's just such a complex, amazing situation.
But to tie it back to MSU, though, I think what this does is a lot of the same things for me. It is nothing but good news for Michigan State. Nothing but good news, because you better believe Mel Tucker has already been saying to every last recruit he talks to in the state of Michigan and the state of Ohio and in all these places where they go head to head with U of M on the trail, and saying, you think that guy's going to be there? He just took a $4 million pay cut. You really think he's going to be there your whole career? I'm just getting started. Come build something with us. They're fading. We're growing. Like that. Those are the same things that everybody said about D'Antonio when D'Antonio was in his last handful of years. He was out there. And listen, he was never a power broker on the recruiting circuit.
It broke him. He couldn't get anybody.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you see it now because those names, those guys from those last few classes are the ones that are now leaving the program or falling. You're going to see them all fall way behind on the depth chart next year. So I don't know that the Michigan is going to bottom out the same way that MSU that they did, just because Harbaugh, you know, Michigan still has recruiting appeal for whatever reason. And so I think you're always going to be able to do okay. But like, this is incredibly good news from not only like the Schadenfreude point of view for MSU fans, but like from a ability to get and own your home state on the recruiting trail and the nearby territories. This is as big a gift as Mel Tucker could ask for in a challenging early tenure at MSU.
It's a very good thing. And one thing I want to leave you with is you have late night banter talks with your Michigan friends. Don't let them get confused that Michigan now has more money to give to assistants or even to give to recruits, because now they're in the bag game. Like, don't get it twisted. This is not a budget line move. Right. Michigan is one of the most strongest revenue generating programs in the country. $4 million is neither here nor there. It does not mean that they get better assistance because of it. Remind them that Michigan also loves to tell everyone that they have the quote money cannon. So you can't have the money cannon and also only pay Jim Harbaugh less than Chris Mack, head coach at Louisville's men basketball team. You can't be both. Okay. So nope. Broke Wolvies is the new line. I mean, it's kind of pathetic. So with that, good things ahead for Michigan State, so it seems. We made it through the season, one of the weirder ones, but frankly, we're on the other side and hoping 2021 gets a little more stabilized for everybody and positive things coming for the Spartans.
I agree. I'm all for it. Sign me up, John.
All right. So you want to take a quick commercial break and then we'll go to what once was our favorite son, the basketball team. And we have some harsh words
for him. He's running into some trouble. There's no question. All right. Ready. We're taking a break. 3, 2, 1. And we're back. All right. Listen, this is not how I usually feel, John, when we're about to talk about men's basketball. Generally, there's a feeling of optimism or things are negative, it's like, that's a blip, or that was a good season or something like that. But we're in some more dire straits, I think, than MSU's program has been in at least a handful of years, probably since Miles Bridges' freshman year.
Yeah, but at least with that, you could see the future. You know, now that said, we can see the future with Michigan State's next year's recruiting class. So let's not get too crazy.
True.
But at the same time, this year is going to continue to be a challenge. And I think we saw the ceiling of this team this past week, which is good, quite good. A win against a Rutgers team that is frankly fine, just fine. A 68-45 dominating performance in all facets of the game. And, A.J. Hogard passed his first test. We out-rebounded Rutgers by 20. Langford had a nice second half. We held their explosion score to 5 of 18 shooting. Got over the turnover problem in the first half. It seemed like this new rotation thing was working. And fast forward 3 days later against Purdue, and the good vibes keep rolling. First half was a work of art. Defense all of a sudden mattered in East Lansing again. All the things that Michigan State was built on were coming to fruition. Marcus Bingham looked capable. Everyone played in the first half and seemingly playing well in this new rotation. And Austin, the most frustrating part about all of this was that for the first time in maybe podcast history, the reason, the singular reason that Michigan State lost to Purdue on a last second shot was because Tom Izzo and his coaching staff coached them out of a win. And it was one of the most perplexing things we'd ever seen from our Hall of Fame coach, you know, going from a 15-point halftime lead to benching your all your fives, who had shut down your boy Trevion Williams for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. And putting Joey Hauser on him for the final 4 minutes of the game, which is an unfair ask to Joey. Why you would do that is beyond me, especially when you would have three bigs that have already played in that game and defended him well. And it was just mind-boggling to see the difference between the first half and second half. And it took some truly wild things to happen for Michigan State to blow a 4-point lead with like 15 seconds left, but it happened, and there's no room for error. And blowing a game at home against a not great Purdue team, it might be the microcosm of the season. And it was infuriating to watch, and it took me the whole weekend to be not mad about it, but I'm glad we could talk about it so I could be mad for the next 3 days. So thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. I'm glad we were able to do this. I'm not going to sit here and try to, you know, there's really two ways we can look at this, right? One is that last week, three of the four halves MSU played the type of basketball that we had been asking them to play more or less the entire season, right? Like we had been, wanting them to care on defense. We'd been wanting them to make Aaron Henry the focal point of the offense. We had been wanting to see somewhat of a consistent rotation, get good play out of the bigs. We got all that for a lot. I mean, we wanted blocks. We got, 9 blocks against Purdue in the first half? We got 8 blocks in the entire game against Rutgers. I mean, really, a lot of the things, A.J. Hogarth does not look out of place. A lot of the things that Michigan State did in those three halves were very, very good omens. And then just to completely and totally fall apart in the second half with the aid of your, like you said, Hall of Fame head coach is a really tough pill to swallow. I think in normal years, I would be less maybe devastated by a loss like this because, there are a lot of winnable games still left on the schedule. But the fact of the matter is that this is a really, really, really good conference this year. And, you know, there are no gimmies. I mean, if you look at MSU's schedule the rest of the way, including the teams we're going to talk about, you've got 7 ranked teams, and of those 7 ranked games against ranked teams right now, 4 of those are against teams ranked in the top 7. Okay. On top of that, you've got to play Ohio State twice and Illinois once. The other games that fill in the rest of that are at Purdue, at Indiana, at home against Indiana, at Rutgers, who is no longer ranked, but is still Rutgers. That, you know, we've seen them win a lot of big games already this season, at Maryland, never an easy place to play. I mean, you don't look at this schedule and say, okay, MSU's going to – here's how we're going to get to 20 wins and get in the tournament. Fact of the matter is they're sitting here at 8-12, and they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 15 games left. It wouldn't shock me if they went 500 the rest of the –
That would be ideal. I don't
right.
see
– Right, and it's hard.
So, okay. Let's back up, because a team like Michigan State can't lose to teams that shoot 3-for-24 from 3.
Right.
They can't lose to teams that whose second leading scorer had 7 points in the game, or whose backcourt goes 2-for-15. I mean, they did everything right, but they just didn't close out the game. And it was just so upsetting to watch Trevion Williams, who got in the last 8 possessions, they gave him the ball. And why wouldn't you? And so you know it's coming, and yet you like are handicapping yourself by putting an undersized 6'6 guy on him who's not known for his defense. Like, I just, it was really hard to watch. And especially after you watched how well the rotation was working in the first half. So all things are kind of thrown out the window for me, as I was under the impression in the Nebraska game, you know, this was like, turn the page, Hogard in the lineup, you know, Bingham not going to see minutes, you know, it's a new rotation. And you saw that for 2.5 games, and then just it stopped. And I'm just really unclear why. And so now I have no idea what to expect as they take on a brutal week here at Iowa, top 5 ranked Iowa, and then on to Indiana this weekend at home. But I mean,
your next 5 games, John, your next 5 games are at Iowa, home against Indiana, home against Illinois, at Rutgers, at Ohio State. And that's before a home date against Nebraska. And right after that, you got to go on the road at Michigan. I just read off those 6-7 games. Aside from Nebraska at home, I mean, those games are at best. I mean, I don't know how many of those games MSU is even going to be favored in. Like, you're really getting down to it. I mean, you know, earlier, I think, especially after Rutgers, I would have said, and I felt pretty confident, shit, halfway through the game against Purdue, I would have said, okay, we've turned the corner. Might lose to Iowa, still might lose some of these games, some really good teams on the schedule, but this team's going to get in as like a 6 or a 5, and, you know, they're going to do their Sweet 16 thing, and it's going to be a nice little season. Now, I think all the questions are back on the table. Now, I say that also with the caveat of I don't want to write off 2.5 really good games because of 1 half of basketball. But that's sitting here today. Once they play Iowa, which we should probably start talking about, that to me is a big – that's a big barometer setter, because Iowa is a big, big, big time challenge. I mean, this team can score. That's all they can do. They score. I mean, Luka Garza, talk about needing to play good post defense. This guy's averaging like 28-8, shooting nearly 50% from 3. I mean, there's nothing he can't do. And there's no Xavier Tillman this year to come in here and try to help Michigan State out. So they're going to have to figure out a way to keep up with or slow Iowa down. And, you know, listen, you go in and you beat a top 5 team, I think everybody can kind of look back in context and say, okay, maybe that last half against Purdue is really unfortunate, but obviously this team's going to pull it together a little bit. But listen, this game could go south real quick too. I mean, MSU only scored 54 points against Purdue. That's really their, by far their worst, well, maybe not by far, but it's one of their worst offensive performances of the year so far. And you got to turn around and shake it off. And I guess it's a good thing that they've had nearly a week to do so. But, I mean, Iowa presents some very, very difficult challenges from an offensive standpoint.
So it's interesting how they are able to make their team go around Luka Garza. And one defensive effort was to let Luka score. It's simple math. And you know, somewhere, someone in the Big Ten last year, and every coach started copying it, or a lot of them did if they were smart. Otherwise, I'm not sure. It just happened by happenstance. But a lot of folks said, okay, if Luka Garza is going to get, you know, 20-plus shots, we'll let him get his shots. And let's say he makes 60% of them, you know, and we let him get his, and he gets at most 30 points in this game. Their defense is bad enough that means that CJ Frederick, Jordan Bohan, well, he didn't play last year, but this year, Jordan Bohan and Joe Weiskamp and Connor McCaffrey weren't shooting threes from deep. Another thing that Iowa loves to do. So we're actually kind of taking away the opportunities for more points from Iowa by kind of containing the offense to Luka Garza. And with that, we know that their defense is, we believe the bet we're making is not good enough to keep up with our normal offense. You know, that was kind of the strategy, and it worked. It did. You know, Michigan State also was fortunate to have Xavier Tillman. So with that combination, the thing that's a bit different this year is that Michigan State doesn't have the offensive firepower. And so that strategy, I don't think, is applicable this year. It just can't be. Iowa is as bad defensively as they were last year, but are actually better offensively. So I don't know how MSU is going to come out and defend. There is, like we've been talking about, opportunities for Marcus Bingham to play. And it's against guys like Garza, where all you are doing is asking him to just make his shots a bit more difficult. That's it.
Right.
Right. You're not saying score, Marcus. You're not saying anything, but just like make him alter his shot. And that's it. You're also going to see, I hope, Matty Sissoko try and move him physically to places where he doesn't want to be on the floor and have to work to get back to the position to score or attempt, because Luka's going to get his. It's just a matter of, can Michigan State contain the guard blow up problem that they've had? And we talked about last podcast where someone always blows up because we have such bad guard defense that seemed like it's been cleaned up against Rutgers and Purdue. This is a whole new animal. CJ Frederick, Joe Weiskamp, Jordan Bohannon are all very nice scoring guards. It's going to be a bit different.
Yeah. I mean, you look at this team and the numbers don't lie. They average 91 point something points a game. Although that number has come down since they since they've gotten into Big Ten play, they've only cracked 90 one time, and it was in an overtime loss against Minnesota, who scored 102, beat them 102-95 in the barn. Now, since then, they've beaten three ranked teams, including Minnesota, who they came back and beat at home by 15. But listen, this is a really talented offensive team. If you're going to talk strategy, I mean, I don't think Michigan State has any choice but to go the let Luka eat and just try to bother his shots whenever you can with length plan. I just don't think there's any other winnable strategy for Michigan State, because you don't have the individual defenders to truly take him on and expect to deal with him on a one-on-one basis. I mean, you could deal with Trevion Williams is a very good player. It's just such a different ball game. I mean, Trevion Williams is all of 6'7". You've got guards out here at 6'11", 7 feet with long arms who can really shoot the three. I mean, he's a very, very good player, and you don't have the individual defenders to deal with him. So what you have to do is you kind of got to let him do his thing. And I think that 2 points is fewer than three strategy is what MSU is going to have to do. I think what they really, the struggle here is that they, you know, have done well on the fast break, and that's where MSU is able to kind of score points and avoid some of those frustrating offensive possessions that we've seen time and time again this year. And the problem is that plays right into Iowa's hands. It keeps them from having to defend, which they do poorly, and it gets them the ball back quicker. Now, I'm not saying don't score the points, take the points if you can get them. I mean, that's, you're going to have to score a lot of them to stay in this game. So you got to do what you got to do, but it's a tough combo. I mean, you're going to need top notch. Here's one thing I will say. These Iowa guards, while they can all shoot, none of them are dynamic drivers of the ball. Jordan Bohannon is a spot up 3-point shooter. He can pull off the dribble a little bit. He's not blown by anybody. Same goes for Wieskamp. Same goes for Connor McCaffrey. I don't think CJ Frederick is doing a ton of that either. So you're not really dealing with that same type of like explosive guard that seems to be what really gives MSU issues. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting evening. But you listen, I think if I'm the coach here, if I'm Tom Izzo, I'll die letting Luka Garza be the one to beat me. I'm not going to go down letting Wieskamp, Bohannon, and Frederick and these guys be the ones to take me down. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I think this. Listen, it's with a team like Iowa, they're a bad shooting night away from losing to anybody. That's why I don't think they're truly this elite team. Like, yeah, these dudes can friggin' score, But they're also out here giving up tons of points to just about every opponent that they play. I mean, Minnesota dropped 102 on them. They lost to Gonzaga 99-88. You know, there's no shortage of ability to get buckets against them. It's just, can you do it enough? And are they, you know, off when it comes to shooting? So, big game.
The thing about Luka that has really evolved over the last year is his 3-point shooting. I mean, he's shooting 49% from three. It's incredible. You're going to see Marcus Bingham and Matty Sissoko a lot. You should anyway, because they're the only ones who have the length, and Matty is the only one with the strength to bother him both on the perimeter and on the block. And it's all about, like we talked about, you don't even have to make a block. It's just affecting somebody's shot. Luka, you know, rarely when you're 6'11 are you affected by anybody when you're shooting. Marcus and Matty have the opportunity to be one of the few people who can and keep up with him, you know, off the 3-point line on the block. So MSU certainly has the rim protection capabilities. At the same time, you've taken away an offensive weapon when those two are on the floor, which is fine, right? You're just going to have to concede that, which means you're going to need to find scoring somewhere else, which means, you know, it's probably not a night for Thomas Kithier. You know, it's probably not a night for other folks who aren't able scorers, because like we keep talking about, Iowa's going to get theirs. MSU needs to get as many buckets as we can. You're going to see Rocket Watts certainly not afraid to shoot. He's going to have to score. Joey Hauser is going to have to show up. This is, you know, you're going to need a ton from Aaron Henry again. All possible. It's all there. And I think if you want to look at, you know, two sides of the coin for this game is you win in Iowa City. I don't care if there are fans or not. You win in Iowa City, you can put to bed at least for a while the is MSU going to make the tournament?
Yes, I agree with that.
The flip side is, I don't even know, is that a realistic thing? I don't know if it is.
I'll say it's realistic. I'm not going to say it's likely. I'm going to say that I absolutely think it's a realistic possibility. If only because, again, with a team like Iowa, they're a cold shooting night away from scoring 75 points, and Michigan State's going to be able to keep up with that, and vice versa. You know, I think MSU is capable of getting hot and doing some great things. But really, I think what's really emerging here that's worrying me personally, and I'm a little nervous that it's going to really come to roost in this one, is that I don't know that Joey Hauser is on a good team, on a team capable of winning a conference. I'm not sure Joey Hauser is the second best player on that team. I'm just not sure that it's possible. Defensively, he's proving to be somewhat of a liability. So maybe not a liability, but not a plus player. He can't guard elite athleticism type bigs, and he's not all that big, so he can't really hang with the big size either. He's a bit of a mismatch down there. And then offensively, I think he's a little streakier than anybody really accounted for, not only with his shot, but just his ability to get a shot. I mean, he needs a creator for him. This is really, you know, the more this season goes on, you know, listen, AJ Hogard, I think, has done an admirable job given the situation he's been put into. And I think that there is a ton of potential in there for him. But this season is really where you wish you had Cassius Winston, you wish you had Jalen Terry, you wish you had one of those playmaking, pass first, creative point guards, which maybe Terry isn't, but fact of the matter is, if you can get Joey Hauser his shot in the right place, we've seen him be really effective. It's just he's not the type to get it, and MSU doesn't have a full-on facilitator that's ready to take that role right now.
So here's the good news, and I think I mentioned this or made this statement probably on Twitter, was that AJ Hogard is the only player outside of Rocket Watts that can get to the paint whenever he wants and get a decent look or make a decent look for someone else. And Rocket Watts' shortcoming is that he has no interest in doing anything but getting that look for himself, which is not great, because, you know, to your point, that's how you get Joey Hausers of the world going. The problem is that AJ Hogard doesn't know that he's allowed to be that guy in the late shot clocks to demand the ball and a high pick and make something happening, much in the way we've watched Galen Lucas, Keith Appling, Cassius Winston do over the past decade, right? And it's a big ask to be like, hey, buddy, this is your when shit hits the fan, go get the rock and go to work. He's 18 years old, I think he's actually 20. He's a freshman, and he's new to this role. But he has to be that. You know, it's unfortunate that that's the situation. It has to be that. You mentioned Joey Hauser can't be the second best player on someone's team. You're absolutely right. What we've learned, and this is just the way it is that Michigan State's best players are not as good as the best players have been in the past. Any decent team. It's not a knock on Aaron Henry. It's not a knock on Joey Hauser. They're not there yet. They're not as good as you need to be for your best players to win a conference. It's just not there. Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's where we're at.
Well, what has to happen here, I hate to quit on it already, but MSU is four losses behind Michigan. I think you could put the conference stuff to bed at this point. I think the conversation has to be more of making the actual NCAA tournament, and I don't think that is by any means out of bounds at all. But if MSU wants to take a step closer towards the top of the conference, in my opinion, one thing and one thing only has to happen. You just sort of touched on it, and I think I might just be beating a dead horse here because I'm not sure, you know, old dog, new tricks. Rocket Watts has to be better. He can't shoot 28% from three. He can't only have three assists a game. He can't shoot 36% from the field. He can't have less than two rebounds a game. These things cannot happen if this team's going to be great. Again, I don't know if that's asking too much. I personally don't think it is. What we saw in the second half of the season from Rocket Watts last year was a player that is significantly better than the player that we have seen this year. I know he was dealing with a little bit of leg trouble early on. I don't know how much that is to account for it. The fact of the matter is we expected more this year and we have been disappointed. I would say Rocket himself has probably been pretty disappointed. The season's not over. Not everything is decided at this point in time. He has to step up if this team is going to be anything more than a, hey, thank God we kept that tournament streak alive type of team. If that, it simply has to change. I think, you know, because by him taking that step forward, that trickle down effect on everybody else from Aaron Henry to the very bottom of this roster is massive. If he's able to take a step forward, Hogard keeps taking a step forward. Everybody, rising tide rises all boats or some stupid saying like that.
Yeah.
Lifts all boats. That's the one. Like, that is truly the case here with Rocket Watts. So if there's one player, and honestly, if there's one player who should excel in a game like the one he's about to play, it is Rocket Watts, because he might get checked by CJ Frederick who's the Jordan Bohannon. If you got Jordan Bohannon on you and you are not going to the rack or getting into the lane and making a play, you're just not going to do it. So this to me is a massive opportunity for him to take a big step forward. Two other quick things that I would like to see. One, I would like to see Gabe Brown play a lot more. He's shooting 46% from three. This team needs help scoring. He's their most versatile wing defender. Get Gabe Brown minutes. Don't care who they come at the expense of. And on top of that, one thing specifically against Iowa that MSU has to concentrate on, and again, this is one of the complications of this roster, they cannot turn the ball over. Giving away easy buckets against Iowa is just, you might as well just walk off the court, because you're not, with this offense, you're not going to keep up with them. The biggest culprits of the turnovers are Aaron Henry with three a game and Joey Hauser with two a game. Those can't happen. You can't be doing that in this game and expect to come out even close, quite frankly. So in terms of Iowa, like, we spent a lot of time on them, but I'm looking at Rocket and I'm looking at Aaron with the turnovers. You guys can't be doing that. So, and they're both going to have to shoot better. And also Aaron Henry, you can't shoot 25% from three.
Well,
either stop shooting them or shoot them better.
Come on, man. Seriously. Shoot him better.
Shoot him better.
You're right about the turnovers. You know, in Minnesota's upset win over Iowa, they only had 8 self-inflicted wounds, 8 turnovers. Gonzaga beat them. Gonzaga plays a different style of game and also is a different talent. They turned it over 18 times, but Gonzaga's allowed to do that. They're playing at an Alabama football level of different games. So
they really are. They really are. Jalen Suggs is like the Najee Harris to them, where it's like, you don't need, or like the Mac Jones or two. It's like, you don't need this. Yeah. Why do you have this? Let somebody else have this.
Exactly, dude. So, you know, Iowa, one of the more difficult games, maybe the most difficult game the entire year, all the way in Iowa City. You know, I hope Tom Izzo figures it out too. I mean, frankly, yeah. We are too far into the season. You know, we are at the point in the season that he is every single year where they go through their slump, right?
Yep.
And it's on him to figure it out. And he's done it for however many years in a row. So, unfortunately, he carries that burden. He's kind of done it to himself a bit. But if anyone can do it, it's probably him. And, you know, a bit of reprieve against Indiana. But frankly, dude, Archie Manning owns Tom Izzo. It's not even a joke. Like, yeah. MSU's lost to Indiana, I believe, the last 3 times, 4 times?
At least the last 3 times.
Yeah, I mean, they're not good. But at the same time, apparently Archie has a pretty good idea of what to do against Spartans. So they are 8-5. They do have a first-round pick in Trace Jackson Davis. I don't know, but they're kind of like MSU to an extent. You know,
it's not a good team, though. It's not a good team. We don't need to dance around it. This is not a good – this is a game that Michigan State should absolutely win.
Yeah.
I know it's at home. It's against a team that is super mid. I mean, look at the game. They've played 4 ranked teams, okay? Mm-hmm. And the closest they've been in any game was a 7-point loss. Excuse me. They lost by 2 against Florida State. But you lost by 22 against Texas, 2 against Florida State, 9 against Illinois, 7 against Wisconsin. I mean, your best win of the you beat Penn State by 2. You beat Maryland by 8. You beat Nebraska by 8. I mean, what's your best win of the year? It's one of those. I mean, you lost to Northwestern. So there, yeah, I'll give, you know, listen, I know I'm indicting MSU with a lot of those things, which is fine. But this is, you don't look at Michigan State and think they're world beaters. So you can't feel this. You can't feel any different when you look at Indiana. Every time I watch Indiana, it blows my mind how little of a plan they look like they have at any given point in time. This year, they seem to have figured it out at least a little bit in that they're like, okay, we'll just get TJD the ball as much as possible. He's averaging 20 points, 9 boards a game, 2 blocks. I mean, he hasn't made a 3. I'm not sure he's attempted one because he doesn't need to. Right. Shooting over 50% from the field. I mean, he is the focal point. I honestly don't think that the plan against Indiana should be a whole lot different than the plan against Iowa, quite frankly. You just let the big guy eat. You try to make him work for it. Try to get those rebounds. Keep him to one shot attempt and let him eat and make the other guys beat you. And the other guys are they're fine. I mean, Armon Franklin's having a nice year. He's averaging almost 13 a game, 4 rebounds and shooting almost 48% from 3. Outside of that, they don't have another guy that plays significant minutes shooting better than 36% from 3. Al Durham's averaging 11 points a game. Fact of the matter, they don't have – the thing that blows my mind with these guys, they have one guy that plays significant minutes that shoots better than 74% from the line, and that's Trey Galloway, who I know MSU was recruiting for a bit. No one averages a lot of assists. Aside from Trace Jackson Davis, Race Thompson averages, you know, 6.5 rebounds a game. It's the same faces we've seen the last 2 years, 3 years, it seems like, and no one really does a whole lot different. So this to me is a game that MSU should deploy the exact same tactics that they deploy against Iowa, and they absolutely should win. This is the one, John. No matter what, if they lose to Iowa, I'm still willing to be like, okay, you can figure it out, you can pull it together. You lose at home against Indiana, and you have a 3-game losing streak that includes home losses to Indiana and Purdue. And I think you have to have a very, very, very real conversation about that. It's very possible Michigan State misses the tournament if they lose both games this week.
Yeah, and at the same on the other side the coin, you can put all that to bed. You can win both of these games.
Absolutely.
And you know, I said earlier that they don't have the top end talent to do it. I stand by that. But they do have eight guys that are good basketball players. It just comes down to figuring out how to use those eight guys and then figuring out how to use the other three who are very good at one thing. You know, it's Foster Lawyer, use him correctly. You know, Gabe Brown, use him more. Marcus Bingham, use him correctly. It's there. You know, it's just a matter of figuring out how to use the pieces. And Tom's the master at that, but he's got to figure it out. He's got to figure it out or it's going to be a short season. I'll tell you that. So strap in. Iowa's going to be an up and down affair. Don't get too high. Don't get too low because score buckets are going to come in waves on both sides. You're never really out of it with Iowa.
Right.
Just if you're a Big Ten purist, it's not going to be pretty. But stay for the Fran McCaffrey freakouts. Those are always fantastic.
Yes, the Frantrums. We all know them and love them. We'll see, man. This is kind of the week. I think I've been putting it off, and I think had they beaten Purdue, I wouldn't necessarily feel this way. But you don't have a lot of giveaway games here on the schedule in this good of a conference. So this, you got to at least split this week to keep hope alive. Not necessarily keep hope alive, but
you're allowed to
say, I won't go that far. There's still a lot of winnable. There's still a lot of ranked games on the schedule. So you get plenty of opportunity. But I mean, before things get real dire, before you're squarely on the bubble, you got to at least split the games this week.
Let's try for it.
IMO. All right. That's it, John. That's all I got.
Hey, shout out to the hockey team who lost 9-0 to Michigan and then turned around and beat them 3-2 and scoring two goals in like the last 2 minutes. That is quite the rubber band or boomerang there, boys. So congrats. Listen, congrats to our
hockey. Any week you beat Michigan is a good week, so I'm okay with that.
That's right. All right. That's all I got for you folks.
All right, guys. Well, as always, thanks for sticking with us, and we will catch you next week.
See you.